We're going to get started. We have two bills before us, and my goal is to move very rapidly so we can all get out to dinner sometime relatively soon. What I wanted to, well, actually, let me wait till more members come in because I want to explain what's going to happen the rest of the week, but I'll wait for a couple more members to come in. In the meantime, Representative Loeffler has House File 3080, and the chair will move House File 3080 be referred to the General Register. Representative Loeffler will be laying this bill over once we're done with the testimony. So, Representative Loeffler, your bill is before us. You do have an amendment, but the amendment is not doable for us per our committee rules. At some point, I do want you to talk about the amendment as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be glad to do that. It was actually a suggestion from one of the school districts, but that would just clarify existing law as well as our proposal. And I so appreciate you taking the time to hear this. How I first heard about this issue, because I don't have the pleasure of coming to your committee very often, although I wish I had an opportunity to be here because you're a great group of people and do good work, is I was contacted by my constituent, Sonia Colgren, who you will hear from shortly, who's a wonderful, dedicated teacher, and who discovered, to her dismay and unbeknownst to others in her administration and local, that the when we made some changes in law related to continuous probation, the 3 years probationary period for teachers, we made an exemption for military service. So if you were called up to military service, the clock basically stopped. It says it continues, but you still have to get your 3 years in the classroom. But we didn't provide for maternity leave, paternity leave, or medical leave, which is, of course, a normal situation that happens in people's lives. And we thought we ought to be able to have someone take believe that they need to bond with that new baby and recover from birth and still have that, not have the time clock go back to zero, which was the interpretation of some related to current law. And so the goal of this is just to say, just like with military service, if you go off on a maternity, paternity, or medical leave while you're in that three-year period, the clock pauses, basically, and then you have to come back and finish the 3 years. And with that, I'd like to introduce Sonia Colgren, who alerted me to this issue.
Thank you. Good evening.
Oh, thank you, Committee Chair. Thank you, committee members. I contacted Diane.
I'm sorry for interrupting. Can you state your name just for the record?
Sonia Colgren.
Thank you.
I contacted Diane, I think, in January. I gave birth to my second child, a son, on November 1st. And I received a phone call from the HR supervisor for my district letting me know in mid-December that I would need to come back early from my maternity leave if I wanted to be tenured after this year. I'm in my third year of the tenure process. And I was horrified. I had been approved for my maternity leave, and I was struck with postpartum depression after I gave birth to my son, so I knew that I couldn't go back early. It just wasn't going to be a possibility for me. And so I contacted Diane just to let her know what was going on. I am a social worker in Northeast Metro 916. I work with level 4 EBD students, mostly adolescent boys. And I've worked very hard with these kids, and I've put in 2 years, and I just didn't feel it was fair that I'd have to start my tenure process all over. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Thank you. And just to show that there is harmony, at least in Metro Districts 916, we have Connie Hayes, the superintendent.
Good evening, Superintendent.
Good evening, Chair, members. My name is Connie Hayes, Superintendent, Northeast Metro 916 Intermediate School District. I believe my number one mission as superintendent is to ensure that every student in our district has the very best teacher and related service providers to help our students grow and develop. In the last 6 years, our HR department has significantly improved recruitment, screening, selection, placement, evaluation, and tenure decisions of our teachers. When we hire administrators, I warn them that they must not only help staff develop, but they have to balance that in helping staff that don't quite fit the needs of our district to move on. And I share that story with you to let you know that I support this legislation, not because I don't have high expectations for our teachers. I have very high expectations, but it needs to be balanced and it needs to be fair. Districts absolutely need sufficient time to evaluate, observe, coach, and encourage new teachers to develop their skills. The current language requires 120 days of teaching in the first three consecutive years. If you don't meet that criteria for any reason, you start over, as you heard Sonia talk about her situation. At 9:16, we look early and we look often regarding the progress of our teachers. So this fall, when we identified four excellent teachers who are being negatively affected by this change, I became concerned, and I want to tell you their stories. Teacher number one, she is in her third year of probation on maternity leave, only was able to teach 94 days, and now has to start her three consecutive years probation over. Teacher number two, in her second year of probation on medical leave, rearranged her leave so that she could actually schedule to teach for 123 days. So for her, the situation is fixed, unless, of course, she happens to miss four additional days in the remainder of the school year. Teacher number three, in her third year of probation on maternity leave, will teach 113 days and has to start her 3 years of probation over. Teacher number four, in her third year of probation on maternity leave, only got in 111 days and now has to start over with her three consecutive years. All four of these teachers would have moved towards tenure status in our district if it were not for the probation or the problem identified in this recent bill. So I urge you to consider amending this bill so we don't have teachers like Sonia caught in this situation. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Superintendent. So just to be clear, you as the superintendent, you do not have discretionary on this issue because the parameters are set in state statute. Is that correct?
Chair, that is correct. That is our interpretation of the law as it stands.
And Mr. Chair, there's one key point that I didn't highlight that I should have, and that this is written so it goes retroactive to the change in this requirement, so that those four individuals that were just described, three of which would have to start over, if it's your wish that we recognize that life happens, and that they would not be caught in this and have to start over, so that everyone would have that chance to have the full 3 years both before and after their medical or maternity leave.
Representative Loeffler, there are in your bill, and I guess I'm asking this, there are limitations in terms of how long that leave could be, so that arguably someone isn't gone for 2 years and then attempts to walk back in and start in at that point?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have a limit that they have to resume teaching within 12 months. So you can't have someone who goes off on maternity leave and says, I want to be a stay-at-home mom or dad for till they enter kindergarten and then start up again. It has to be, you know, less than a 12-month period or 12 months, and then that the clock is put on hold.
Very well. Is there anyone that wishes to testify on the bill? Please come forward.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Roger Arnson. I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principal Associations. We're covered by the same statute, and we have a keen interest in this. We work it all the time. The bill's a really good idea. I think the people that practice in this area have thought for years there's some horrible inequities. There's a case that actually made it up to the Court of Appeals some years ago where a poor teacher in Eden Prairie taught 2 years, went out on medical leave for a year, taught two more years, was at the end of year five and was terminated as probationary. It doesn't make much sense that you have to start over because you're pregnant. kind of an old world bias in that. I might say, and one of the reasons I wanted to comment about this is there are some other effective dates in the statute that came out a couple of years ago when we redid the evaluation and everything. We were hoping to fix those as well, and we'll try to bring those to you in the next couple of days, where instead of saying, as this date, this proposal does, has a date certain for when it starts, it's retroactive, but it's date certain when it starts, some of them, of the probationary period statute, said effective for the 13-15 collective bargaining agreements. And that's created kind of a moving target on some of these for you, and we actually visited with some folks last week about maybe we could fix that, and since you have this, we'll try to get that to you in the next few days as well as the policy bill goes forward. But this is a good idea, Mr. Chair, and it always raises a little discomfort because these statutes have a high potential, you know, for litigation if they're not correct, and that's why we like to get them correct. But this looks like a good fix to this problem and unfairness for folks that are on these leaves. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Appreciate your technical advice on that score, Mr. Harrison. Anyone else who wishes to testify on the bill? Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening, Mr. Chair, committee members. For the record, Jody Boer with Education Minnesota, and I just want to go on the record to let you know that we fully support this bill and ask for your support of it. I couldn't say it any better than Sonia or Representative Loeffler or Connie did, so we just want to let you know that we absolutely support this, think it's necessary, and ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Boer. You know, someone told me not too long ago that one of the ways in which we lose good people in the classroom is through becoming moms.
Yes, and I think we're trying to do everything we can to prevent that, and this bill would help that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Thank you. Ms. Holgren.
And I will tell you that when I found out that I was going to have to start over, my motivation to continue working with the difficult children that I work with was pretty low. So, thank you.
And we need to keep her.
Thank you. Is anyone else who wishes to testify? Are there any questions from committee members?
All right. Mr. Chair, you said earlier that you would like to discuss the amendment. I'll at least give you the history of that. In that, in drafting our bill, we just copied the language that was used for the military leave so that they would be parallel. But since that time, some good minds have said, you know, that wasn't necessarily the best, clearest drafting. And so they had this amendment drafted up with the help of our staff and House Research just to make it a little clearer about how it works. And I think it works fine to make this as a clarifying change, but I just wanted to let you know where it came from and what the intent was.
Very well. Ms. Representative Loeffler, if we see this bill again, then I suspect we'll see this language.
Thank you.
All right. And Ms. Colgrett, so your second child was born last July, is that correct?
November 1st.
Oh, really brand new baby.
Yeah, 4.5 months.
Yeah, how's baby doing?
He's doing good.
Wonderful.
He's very healthy.
What a blessing. Wonderful. All right. Thank you for your testimony here today. Members, with that, the chair is going to lay House File 3080 over.
Thank you, Mr. Representative. Chair, committee members.
Representative Seltzer. Chair moves House File 2681 be re-referred to the Committee on Education and Finance. And members, we will be voting on that motion today. Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I am honored to be here tonight, and I was also honored to serve on the School Board Facilities Working Group, along with Mr. Bourgeois with me this evening, and as you know, that group brought forward some great recommendations on how we can improve the process by which we make sure that all of our students are in good school facilities in all of our schools in Minnesota. And one of these recommendations, recommendation number 7, was to streamline the review and comment process, putting more responsibility and decision-making into the hands of locally elected school board members while still maintaining accountability. So what my bill does is enacts these recommendations, and these recommendations have 4 elements. One is to increase the threshold for review and comment from 1.4 to 2 million. The current 1.4 million threshold is very low, and Mr. Bourgeois can talk about that, including relatively small projects that do not justify the administrative burden associated with review and comment. The second element is the repeal the requirement for consultation for smaller projects. So the current consultation requirement for projects with costs between $500,000 and $1.4 million does not, the committee felt, add value to the process, and that was in the opinion of all the professionals that were in our school facilities working group. Eliminating the need, the third point is eliminating the need for review and comment on projects funded entirely through long-term maintenance revenue, lease levy, and operating capital revenue. Projects funded with long-term maintenance revenue and facilities improvement revenue will go through the approval process for those revenues, which provide accountability tailored to those types of projects. And the last is simplify the required data submissions for review and comment to reduce paperwork while still maintaining accountability. That's my bill, summary of my bill, and I do have a testifier, Mr. Chair, Mr. Bourgeois, from who is the business director from Minnetonka Schools, and also served with me on the school facilities work group.
Wonderful. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Bourgeois.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our testimony. In terms of who I'm representing, I'm also representing the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, and really here talking about changes that we think will benefit districts of all sizes all over the state. We worked really hard on the working group to try to make sure that the recommendations that we brought forward were beneficial to everybody, so that every district was kept whole or raised up, rather than trying to make things better for some and not as good for others. So we really worked hard with that. And we feel that this bill, actually, the recommendations in this bill does that. It really rationalizes this whole review and comment process. It takes the obvious and logical facility projects and reduces the paperwork, both for the district and for the Department of Ed. You know, the Department of Ed has also been asked to do more with less over the last several years. And so paperwork reduction for all of us is very beneficial. For $2 million, it's a lot of money to each of us individually, but in the current construction environment, it'll get you maybe 4 to 5 classrooms. A kindergarten classroom will run you, say, $400,000 a year. It's not enough to build a gym or a really big media center, things like that. So it lets you go about your business of doing things like adding all-day kindergarten rooms, or if early childhood funding comes forward in future years, doing those types of 1 or 2 classroom type of projects. It gives school boards the flexibility and the accountability for modest projects. The other thing is it really gets rid of the needless paperwork for the obvious. Under the current regulations, we're required to submit possibly a roofing project where the roof is leaking and we need to replace it. Well, we have to ask for permission to do a roofing project. Those can easily exceed $500,000. But it puts accountability the flexibility at the school board level. School boards are accountable to their local taxpayers, and so they will not be able to go crazy with this level that we're asking for, this flexibility that we're asking for. So it really will again help to streamline that. But the other thing is there'll be real dollar savings for school districts as they're doing projects, and it has to do with even the fact that we save a lot of time. The 60-day review and comment process can actually slow down the time when you can actually go out to bid. And there's a big difference between going out for a summer long-term maintenance project, like a roofing project, a paving project, or even a building addition that has to be done by next September. If you're trying to get that done during the summer construction season, if you can't go out to bid, say, until March or April, because your project is tied up in review and comment, you're going to pay a 20 to 30% premium on the cost of that project in terms of the bid prices, because the vendors, meanwhile, will have been going out and fulfilling their work subscriptions and filling up on projects that they're going to be doing for other entities, not just school districts, but anybody else who needs a project completed during the construction season. And so by allowing school districts to basically get into the water earlier on their bids without having this additional 60-day time frame will really help them to save money and stretch the dollars that they do have. So that's really some of the real-world applications of having a little bit of flexibility at the school district level. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Bourgeois? Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this might be a better question for the School Boards Association when they testify. Thank
you. Very well. You've got to listen. Well, thank you then, and hang around. There might be a question that might bounce your way. So, thank you. Thank you for your work and your testimony.
Thank you.
Ms. Callahan. Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I am very pleased to be with you tonight and excited about the bill in front of you. Representative Seltzer started out on this committee, and every once in a while you're lucky enough to be on a committee that really works, and this was one of those committees. And unlike a lot of people, Representative Seltzer was there every meeting. She participated, she took notes, and followed it very closely. And we came up with a recommendation to an area of school law that hasn't been changed in a very long time. Members, we've got a big problem, and I know this it really isn't in the policy, but more in the finance area. Let me give you an idea of at the high and low ends, if you add up all the facility money school districts get around the state, Minneapolis and St. Paul get about $757 per ADM. And if you look at a non-metro 1,000 to 2,000 pupil district, they get about $136 per ADM. That's a $621 difference. And that just sort of took the committee's breath away. We knew we had a problem. We knew it was unequal in how it went. Mr. Melcher was tremendously beneficial as he looked to analyze this. You know, how much money do districts need to keep the public investment in their community whole and maintained? Those recommendations came up, and I know we're going to really talk about them next year when we go into a funding year about what that looks like around the state and where we need to go. But this is a piece that really has no state fiscal implications that could really help. And to be honest, the first couple meetings were sort of dicey. People were very argumentative about this review and comment. They were very unhappy with the present process. There are 16 different categories school districts have to present information to the department on. It's huge, and every one of those pieces has to be prepared by an architect or a consultant to the school district to present of why that leaky roof needs to be fixed. This recommendation takes that down to 5, which is much more manageable and makes it very clear in common sense that you're using the state building code, that you're following fire code. And this bill really shapes that argument better for school districts. In the end, I think this is our first step in a way to making this difference across the state in a much more fair and equitable distribution of repair and maintenance for facilities. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll pause, but I once again want to comment that Representative Seltzer was a game changer on this one. And I am thrilled to be looking at it and be here tonight advocating that this bill really needs to give us that first step.
Very well. Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. We did hear very good testimony in Chairman Marquardt's committee just, I think, last week on the task force. And it just seems like terrific work and good brains came together and lots of really good agreements. And I think, Representative Marquardt, something that we can do in many different ways that can make a real difference for our schools across the state. Questions, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair and Representative Seltzer, this is a good bill. I have two questions, and I think they're for the Minnesota School Boards Association, for Ms. Kelleher. First of all, when does the public get a chance to know what's in the review and comment? submission to the department? Is there a time when they know what's in that, or is that kept between the department and the school board?
Ms. Colahan, I think we do have folks from the department here that might be able to help with that as well. Ms. Colahan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Erickson, I cannot tell you when that magic moment happens, but since school boards have to adopt these to send them to the department, I think we need to be really clear, and maybe Paul can help us figure out exactly when that occurs.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Chairman, representatives, the review and comment process requires us to have the board adopt it in a public session and have it be reviewed. So it becomes public before it goes to the Department of Education.
Thank you very much. That's what I thought. Ms. Kelleher, my only issue with this new language is on lines 4.1 through 4.3. The word consultation is very broad, and I have to tell you that almost every building project we have had in my home district has had issues with one of the governmental units, primarily the city, on roads, on sidewalks, on how the bus traffic is going to occur. And I'm wondering, and this is something you can think about, Representative Seltzer, too, maybe in consultation with School Boards Association, is there a way to perhaps tighten that phrase so that there are not recurring issues when it comes to the utilities or the roadway, because that has really been an issue, at least in my home district, and it has cost the school district a lot of money to actually come to resolution, because the city takes a position that they thought a school district understood when they prepared the review and comment, and it wasn't that way. Now, maybe that's a unique situation, but I doubt it. So it's a suggestion, and it was one of the reasons that this bill didn't go directly to finance, because I had Representative Woodard call Representative Marquardt's attention to the fact it was scheduled for finance, and I just felt that we needed to perhaps bring up this issue in policy. So I don't know if you have a comment, but I do think consultation is broad and may not, you know, force governmental units such as a city to resolve any issue they're going to have, especially when it comes to the roads and utilities and the sewer. Oh, they're all infrastructure.
Ms. Collin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Erickson. You bring a good point forward, and I know it's not just your area, but around the state that a lot of times we'll have local governments rub against each other when it comes to these kinds of decisions. I think the word consultation is a little bit more flexible. It doesn't say we have to come to an agreement, but I think the idea is we reach out and look at where sidewalks were. There were three areas in the 16 number that dealt with sidewalks. So this is sort of a combination of that, and I think it's encouraging local governments to reach out and try and get in front of this if, in fact, they want to do bigger projects together. And it's a push for all of us to figure out how to actually work together in a more efficient way for the taxpayers. But I feel a little bit more comfortable with the word consultation rather than agreement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I was thinking in terms of maybe consultation with a commitment to resolve any issues in a timely fashion or in a certain amount of time so that this doesn't drag out and the costs don't become prohibitive, because the design of roads and who's going to be responsible for that, I think, can get to be an issue. So I'll leave that up to you, and I'll live with whatever you decide. I just don't want it to come back to bite us because we use the word consultation without any clarifier. Thank you.
Ms. Collins.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Erickson, I think you bring up a good point, and I think we will work on that and make sure we carry that viewpoint forward, because it's very well-founded.
Good advice. Representative Nordis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Basically, just make a comment here that I think this is a good bill, and I served on the school board for over 12 years, and this would be a tool that would be appreciated, and so I just want to make that comment. I guess at the same time, I'd like to indicate that I'm not real happy with the review and comment process as it's affected a school district in my area that is struggling with property tax increases in the range of 80%, doubling in at the minimum. So it's building the school on the back of our ag community, which I don't know how that came about, but and we can't change that here tonight. But it has certainly caused a divisive wedge within that school district and the community, because it's about a 50-50. And it's really hard to see how that's going to improve with time. And so farmers against city is not a good situation. So I just want to make that comment. So,
so Representative Norton, if I understand it, then the review and comment expectation, while intended well, might set up a tense kind of dynamic in a community.
Right. Yeah, Mr. Chair, I guess that's basically what it is. Mm-hmm. And so I don't, you know, it's probably not a flawed system, but in this particular case, the only wealth out there is agriculture. And they're taking, a real hit. So and it's 30 years worth of high property taxes.
Ms. Culler.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nonis, I think you bring up, I've heard that concern expressed by some of my board members from out in the western side of the state, who've had this ag market value go through the roof, and it's somewhat of a tax issue, and they've been denied being able to build a new building just because it really would have been born on the back of local ag and farmers out there, family farms. So I think that's a bigger picture piece that we really need to work out, you know, even more. And I thought we had it figured out, but clearly, as you're seeing, and certainly as my board member, it seems to have some bumps along the way. And it's that's part of our legislative agenda.
Sure. And going forward, maybe there are some things that we can look at, Mr. Chair, not in this committee necessarily, but in the tax committee and other places where I don't think we can fix this situation very easily, but in the future, perhaps we can. So,
thank you, Representative Norton. Representative Salser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. And I just wanted to make a comment as a former, on another note, a former school board member for 8 years. I too appreciated the recommendations that were brought forward.
Very well. Representative Keel has a question.
Just really, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to add to Representative Norris's comment, I think that the ag issue wasn't as difficult as it's going to be when we see commodities go down. Schools are going to have a harder time because they're just not going to have it, that cushion when the prices were higher, now that the ag prices are dropping. But not everything drops. So I just want to remind all the committee members that this will be very difficult for agriculture as the price drops and their expenses stay up. Land costs went up. There's just a lot of variables there that'll be difficult. So if the price stabilizes, that's one thing. But if it drops like they're talking, that'll be the problem. So,
Mr. Bourgeois.
Mr. Chairman, Representatives, this is not part of this bill, but as part of the total package of the working group, that was a very serious area of concern for all of us. And so many of the recommendations are related to equalization and state assistance for those types of situations that you mentioned.
Very well. Thank you. Are there any other questions? All right. Mr. Heller, I think you wanted to testify on the bill, so why don't you come forward, and then members will take a vote. Thank you, Ms. Culler, and thank you, Mr. Boswell.
Thank you, Chair Marani, Chair in Education, Finance, the House File 2681. I unofficially represent the Twice Exceptional Printers Label. I do work in construction. I have a little background knowledge about fast track, important of timeline, and streamlining paperwork. It's important. I'm not quite sure I understand this document, since the structural language and underlined language doesn't read with a reader. However, if I understand this correctly, on the summary here, dated March 8th, 2014, it talks about major projects in the comment period.
looks like they're going from a $500,000 to a $1.4 to $2 million. Not sure if that's I don't know what auxiliary information is. Again, that's the second line from the bottom. I don't know how this applies to Statute 16E regarding contract language. If we're using state money, the district is required to make the content accessible based on Statute 16E, based on 508 and 2.0 WCAG. But that should be in the contract. I'd like to hear from the department on that. This is relating to principle of the universal design as well. Obviously, buildings have to meet code on accessibility architecturally. However, when it comes to the content, including the contract and process of bidding and everything, I think that perhaps need to be considered in this bill as well. As we know, maintenance of effort, it's my understanding, use 50% of that from the federal funding, but they can't use any more of that for construction work. So I guess I don't know who monitors and complies this. Again, that's on the Statute 68 standards, again, regarding content accessibility. I'd appreciate it if somebody could ask those questions regarding that. Other than that, anything that streamlines work and creates delays is going to save the state a lot more and the school district as well.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Heller. Very important point. So with that,
I would ask if the department will answer that question regarding, excuse me, Chair, but if the department would ask the question, if a contractor starts using state money or school districts, are they required to follow the accessibility of the contract language, including content of Statute 16E?
Mr. Heller, let me suggest that you have a conversation with the department. I don't know. Frankly, I don't want the committee to get into that discussion on this bill at this point. But I see someone getting up from the department. They're here. Have that conversation with them.
So you know, they all become private and never get out on the floor, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Representative Seltzer, the chair renews his motion that we didn't amend this, right?
No.
Oh, okay. Thank you. House File 2681 be re-referred to the Committee on Education and Finance. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Members, before you head off, I just wanted to share a quick roadmap for us this week. So this week, it'll be my intent to us to construct an omnibus policy bill. At this point, we're going to be moving that bill forward into the Education Finance Committee. There is a possibility that we'll be moving a bill to the House floor as well. I'll try to keep you posted and up to date about that. But either way, we'll be constructing an omnibus bill. And we're going to be working off of the MDE's policy bill. The chair will be amending that bill, so that's House File 2397. The chair will be authoring an author's amendment for that bill that's been posted. It's the D1 amendment, so that's posted online. And so what I want to do is make sure you all have a good chance to look at that and come prepared to offer amendments and votes on that. So tomorrow, what we'll do is in the morning we'll walk through the D1, we'll move the D1 amendment, we'll walk through that, and hopefully we can do that in the morning and not have to come back in the evening to continue to walk through it. Quite frankly, pretty much everything in the D1 are related to bills that we've had hearings and discussions about. I will try very diligently to point out the areas where we haven't had these discussions. And then we'll lay that over. We will come back. At this point, we're scheduled to come back Wednesday evening to then begin marking up per your amendments the bill. The goal would be for us to finish that work on Thursday. We do have Thursday morning, Thursday evening allotted. If we need Friday, we certainly can do that on Friday as well. My hope is that we can finish our work by Thursday evening. There is a possibility we may not meet on Wednesday evening, you know, depending on the respective caucus's ability to, you know, be comfortable in knowing what's in the bill before they're voting. So I'll stay in close contact with our lead GOP member, Representative Erickson, on that, and I'll give you as far enough notice about that before Wednesday evening rolls around. But anyway, at this point, it's Tuesday morning, possibly Tuesday evening. I think we can walk through it in the morning. Wednesday evening, with the caveat that we may not need to meet Wednesday evening, and then a really strong goal to finish the omnibus policy on Thursday. We have the morning and the evening slotted. We do have a Friday hearing date set aside. My hope is that we won't need to use it. So, the bill is posted. We will bring copies tomorrow for members, and the physical copies tomorrow for members of the committee and the public as well. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you're referring to that small policy bill we're going to have, correct?
Tiny.
I think the chair was using bill, small, yeah. But maybe he used tiny as well. Thank you.
Well, no relative in this place. So. All right. So with that, I'm going to go home and get dinner. We'll see y'all tomorrow at 10 o'clock.
What are we having?